That's the spirit. Kia ora, Peter. I decided to start in a bit more epic fashion this week.
Wow, you certainly did.
I thought I would see if I could find, you know, pretty much if you can imagine something in this life, it exists, and I thought I'd see if I could find some techno-Gregorian chants, just because we're talking religion, but we're also on BFM, so I thought I'd, you know, mix it up. I can't say I like the music very much, but so we'll see. How do you do?
I'm all right, thank you.
Oh, good, good, good. You sound a little better than last week, and that makes me happy. And by next week, you'll be fit and fighting, you'll be back in the ring.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah.
Now, what's going on today?
So we're going to watch the attempt to get Suzanne Huber, the leader of the Daughters of Compassion, made into a saint.
Oh, okay.
This is quite an interesting New Zealand topic, because over the weekend, the Bishop of Auckland met with the Pope, and I mean, if we were meeting with the Pope, I imagine you'd imagine you have a number of contemporary issues to discuss and serious problems that you want to sort out. But no, the priority was, can you please get Suzanne Huber made a saint?
Wow.
So that's a uniquely Catholic conversation, really.
Yeah. I don't know this Suzanne. Forgive me.
Okay. Right, so the remarkable Suzanne came out from France as a Catholic sister in the 1850s. She did not get on very well with her colleagues and eventually ended up going off with a couple of other sisters to found her own order. Well, initially she went off as a branch of the existing order in Mayani in the Hawke's Bay.
Right.
And then she recognised that there was a great need for Māori, and so she moved to Heruhama, Jerusalem, in the upper reaches of the Whanganui River.
Mm.
And there she set up a remarkable little medical clinic and school, which she sought to touch as many of the young people.
This is the Jerusalem, little place in Jerusalem. There's a documentary about that place, which I...
Yes, well, of course, it was a great favourite of James K. Baxter, and so it tends to be the two names associated with her.
Yeah.
Now, James K. Baxter's never going to become a saint, that's for sure.
I was just about to say.
But after a while, she grew frustrated with the limitations of being so far out of reach of anybody else. And so in 1892, she moved to Wellington. And in Wellington, she'd already founded her own religious order, which had some recognition from the Bishop of Wellington. Now, in the Catholic world, it's a bit complicated because an order can be linked to a local diocese, or it can become a recognized international order. And she definitely wanted that international order recognition.
Yeah.
But she quarreled with so many people and was so determined on her approach, which included, for example, using traditional Māori medicine and financing the mission by selling bottles of Māori medicine developed in a rather Western way.
Oh.
So that was quite interesting.
And do you happen to know whether the local iwi had sanctioned it or whether she was just deciding it was a good idea?
Well, she was pretty close to the local iwi in Upper Whanganui, so I think so. Anyway, she moved to Wellington, founded the famous Home of Compassion, and the Home of Compassion was the classic sort of institutional care body which took in every needy person and locked them into an institution and provided medical care and support for the needy, etc., etc. And she became very popular in Wellington, but still not allowed her own order. So eventually, in total frustration, She got the boat during World War One. Would you believe it? Went to Italy and campaigned for 3 years before finally the Pope of the day gave in and created the Order of the Sisters of Compassion. So she got home in, was it about 1920? And she died in 1926, age 78. So she was a fair age by this stage. And the Home of Compassion is fairly well known still in Wellington. Not many sisters left, but still, you know, with a lot, huge money was raised for this grand home. And she had a lot of support in Wellington. They said her funeral was the biggest funeral that a woman had ever had in Wellington.
Wow.
Anyway, the idea of finding a New Zealand saint, this is a bit of a different story, because you understand that the Australians and New Zealanders have been competing to see who could get the first saint.
Okay.
Strange competition for those of us who are not Catholics. But Mother Mary McCulloch, who had New Zealand links as well as Australian links, made it across the line and was declared a saint by the Pope, what was it, 3 years ago, I guess. Anyway,
it's like the Catholic moon landing.
That's right. Oh, it is. It is. So the New Zealand government, the New Zealand Catholic Church, set out to push the case. So you can go on the Home of Compassion website and you can find a page dedicated to it. But there's lots of other pages dedicated to Suzanne Aubert. And in 1995, I think it was, they commissioned a superb historian, Jesse Munro, to write a biography of Suzanne Aubert, which is a very good biography, because they needed the hard facts to present the case that this was a good woman, you see. So this is a long-run game. When you start in 1995, and they've got as far as in 2015, after much campaigning and searching for a miracle, because it was essential to have a miracle.
Right.
Was they thought they'd come up with a convincing miracle. And so they finally got Pope Francis to declare her venerable. So venerable is a good step forward, but there's two steps to go. You've got to go from venerable to be blessed, and then from blessed to being saint.
Right.
So what it appears to be Catholic strategy in New Zealand is to campaign for Catholics to pray to Suzanne Aubert to heal their illnesses, because they really need an extra miracle. And so there's prayers available on the website that you can pray for her to bless you and to heal you. And there's various other sort of strategies going on. Of course, they've got to make sure, because there will be the famous devil's advocate appointed. Have you heard of the devil's advocate?
Only as a concept and not in the sense of in the sainthood realms. Tell me more.
Yeah, so in the sainthood realm, you've got to have somebody who goes searching for any dirt. And, well, you can't have a saint who proves to be, you know.
Damn it, I'm not going to be a saint now. I didn't realise there was somebody who was going to be sniffing around.
That's right.
Oh, well, never mind. So, I'm giving
all
up.
All this is going on. And, I mean, you've got to think of a Vatican department on sainthood. We're being campaigned by countries all around the world to get a saint out of it, because a saint really raises your status.
And the sort of, you can imagine the sort of, you know, the Vatican's probably got dirt finder generals all over the place, but
yes,
but you know, you can imagine the sort of things they're finding out about some of the dirt they're finding out about probably active priests and such is pretty awful. But some of the dirt, I mean, imagine being responsible for finding dirt on someone who's just about to become a saint. It must be stuff like, well, actually, actually, I saw her in the mall, and she, I said hi, and she laughed, and she didn't say hi, or like you know, it must be really minimal stuff.
Despicable behaviour.
Yes, exactly. You know, she used my cheese without asking or something.
Yep. Yeah, precisely. And so, this process is going on, but going on exceedingly slowly. And when you consider that John Paul II became a saint virtually overnight at the instigation of Pope Benedict, there are fast ways of getting it done, but not for a minor woman from New Zealand, of course. It'll go through the painful process. So, obviously, the intervention of Bishop Steve Lowe was trying to make sure that the whole thing hadn't just been put on ice and try and push it forward. And it's, of course, since you're allowed to pray, since she's venerable, you can pray to her or through her already.
Yeah. So.
But the more miracles, the better, you understand.
Well, you did say you need to, you're still not quite right, so you could give her a shout.
That's right, that's right. Now, she was a remarkable woman.
Yeah.
She was a forthright woman. She would go to, for example, prime ministers at Wellington and let them have it if she thought they weren't doing their job.
Oh, good stuff.
And so this is not the normal stuff of piety, but it is great stuff for a really active saint who wants to see things change.
Yeah, that's so, right. That's my kind of saint.
So this might count in a favour, actually.
Yeah. Hey, this is maybe a can of worms, but, I don't come from a Catholic background. I come from, is it Protestant? Is it just not?
That's the alternative.
Yeah, the alternative. Yeah. So in my Sunday school, praying to a human being or indeed anyone but Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the slightly confusing for a child Trinity, is that's bad news. You're not meant to do that. So I'm fascinated by this idea that there is this. I mean, you can also pray to Mary, but it's a bigger can of worms. But maybe it's like there's something about sainthood that to me sort of seems counter to what the nature of a saint even is. Like the in the sense that it's supposed to be the sort of person who's like the most humble possible person, getting like a really big medal for being so humble. And even weird to hear competitions being had between New Zealand and Australia for, a race to be the most, to recognised for the most pious person.
Yeah. And what you don't get, which is really critical to Catholic spirituality, is the idea that, in fact, we mortals here on earth struggle to connect to God. And so if only we can have inspiring examples close to us, and we can ask them to intercede with God on our behalf, then we're much braver to pray if we know that somebody alongside us, like us, is able to reach out and to give our prayers a bit of a push. So in a way, that's the concept. So it's the concept that saints have merit, and they're prepared to use that merit on our behalf if we'll ask them politely.
Okay.
You don't sound persuaded. I'll keep working on you.
It feels like, this is going back to some old feelings of like, there's like, I guess I had just been convinced that there was just in my religious days, that there was no that talking to any other spiritual entity other than God/Jesus was bad behavior. That's like idolatry or, like that sort of stuff.
Okay, so you represent that tradition, which is very Protestant, which is very Muslim, which believes in the purity and the singleness of God, and there's no alternative way than to deal with this God who may be angry with me, but I'll have to face up to him.
Almost definitely. Yeah.
Whereas the Catholic concept of the universe is of a rich hierarchy of goodness in the universe. Instead of thinking evil, thinking of goodness, thinking of layers of care for me, so that saints and angels are constantly abroad and wanting to touch and benefit me if I'm prepared to invite them to do so. So it's the idea of becoming part of a very alive universe, very alive spiritual universe. Such a different way of thinking about it.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay, I'm going to do some reading about it, as I probably can imagine not every BFM listener is fascinated in the minutiae between these things. You know, again, thanks to all the people who, the last few weeks, as I said to you last week, Peter, a rather extraordinary number of people kind of just approaching me in various places to say how much they enjoy this segment. So I'm reveling in it. I'm taking it. All right. Well, best of luck out there getting fully better for next week. And I look forward to finding out what we are speaking about next week.
Splendid.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, this is not the Sisters of Compassion, but it's close. This song's called Lucretia, My Reflection. Thank you, Peter.